Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. Hoo-wah! I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. This is Frontlines of Freedom's 850th show. We've been at it almost 17 years. Okay, our nation's closest ally, the only democracy in the Middle East, Israel, has been under attack by Iran-controlled terrorists since it was founded. Hamas, Hezbollah, and other terrorist groups have attacked, been beaten, sought a truce, which they broke as soon as they could, and now we're not standing with Israel as they deal with Hamas. Hamas and their allies want a truce and a ceasefire without even returning any hostages. This is nonsense, and our nation recently failed to veto a UN resolution condemning Israel for not going along with this stupid truce, and our government still claims we're supporting Israel. Hey, with friends like us, who needs enemies? It's the only democracy in the whole area. It has an Arab Muslim political party in its government. It's been attacked nonstop by terrorists, and we're not 100% behind them? I can tell you that all of our enemies, China, Russia, Iran, and the rest, love this stupid act of ours, as it shows that we have no values and are vulnerable everywhere because no one can trust us. God help us. Okay, joining me at the 50 caliber microphone today is Marine vet Skip Coriel. What'd you do for April Fool's Day, Skip?
I got fooled. All my kids, my wife, everybody fooled me. They just love to joke with me. And I'm just so gullible that I fall for it every single year.
So you know, the next book you write is going to be called Gullible's Travels?
Actually, that has a nice ring to it. I'll get right on that, Colonel.
Good deal. Here's what we have for you today. On News and Comments by the Colonel, I'm going to discuss the likely attack the illegal terrorists in our country may initiate. Then Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby will add his warrant wisdom. David Bob will discuss our Bill of Rights. Most Americans don't even know what's in the Bill of Rights, much less the whole Constitution. Then we'll learn about how Heroes Corner cares for vets. And veteran Teresa Robinson will introduce us to another female veteran.
Hey, troops, please invite your friends to join us at this time on this great radio station. Then head on out to frontlinesoffreedom.com and sign up for our free e-newsletter. And join the conversation at facebook.com/frontlinesoffreedom.
We welcome your input to this show. Send us your ideas and comments through our website, frontlinesoffreedom.com, or by Facebook. And now it's time for news and comments by the Colonel on Frontlines of Freedom. Of course, we'll start with the news. What's first, Skip?
Well, Colonel, tens of thousands of illegal immigrants are flooding into our nation's hospitals for treatment and leaving billions in uncompensated health care costs in their wake. The House Committee on Homeland Security recently released a report illustrating that from the estimated $451 billion in annual costs stemming from our border crisis, significant portions are going to health care for the illegals.
These illegals, dare I say criminals, are everywhere and are using our medical facilities. That means that we may all find a lack of medical support when we taxpayers, citizens, need it. The members of Congress who support this need to be replaced.
And John Spencer is the chair of Urban Warfare Studies at the Modern War Institute at West Point. He served for 25 years as an infantry soldier with two tours in Iraq. He is the nation's leading expert on urban warfare and published a statement late last month highlighting how Israel's critics failed to call out Hamas for using the Shifa Hospital as a terror base, and Israel's unprecedented actions to prevent civilian casualties. He said, quote, "In my long career studying and advising on urban warfare for the U.S. military, I've never known an army to take such measures to attend to the enemy's civilian populations, especially while simultaneously combating the enemy in the very same buildings. In fact, by my analysis, Israel has implemented more precautions to prevent civilian harm than any military in history, above and beyond what international law requires, and more than the U.S. did in its wars in Iraq and Afghanistan."
I know that this is true, and I'm grateful that this information is now formally published and available to everyone. And I hope the idiots who are protesting against Israel in the United States will listen to this and believe it.
And the Delta-class heavy rockets used for American space missions since the 1960s were retired after their final launch late last month. They'll be replaced by the newly developed Vulcan Centaur rocket.
Good news. We do have to be active in space, and I understand getting old.
Attorneys for the estate of Ashley Babbitt, the military veteran who was shot and killed while peacefully standing next to other police officers inside the Capitol on January 6th, have filed opposition to an attempt by our Justice Department to move a $30 million wrongful death lawsuit brought by her widower from San Diego Federal Court to Washington. The DOJ filed a motion for change of venue in the U.S. District Court for the Southern District of California, where Aaron Babbitt filed suit in January for the shooting death of Ms. Babbitt, 35, by Lieutenant Michael Byrd at the Capitol on January 6, 2021. A hearing on the request is scheduled for April 8 in San Diego before U.S. District Judge Cynthia Bachant. Robert Stick, the attorney for Judicial Watch, which represents Mr. Babbitt in the lawsuit, filed a motion saying the litigation in Ms. Babbitt's death would not get a fair hearing in Washington, D.C. Quote, "It's no secret that the District of Columbia is a hostile forum for January 6 defendants," unquote. Mr. Stick wrote in his 20-page response to the DOJ venue motion, quote, "It's also prejudicially biased against Ashley Babbitt," unquote. Mr. Stick cited remarks made on June 5, 2023 by U.S. District Judge Reggie Walton of Washington when he sentenced defendant Daniel Goodwin to 60 days in jail for entering and remaining in a restricted building or grounds on January 6.
Military veteran Ashley Babbitt was murdered by a Capitol Police officer. Her husband and family deserve justice. There is no justice in Washington, D.C. for anyone who is politically conservative. The cop should be punished and the family provided with appropriate compensation.
And service members still aren't getting enough sleep, in large part because there's no coherent Pentagon effort to remedy the problem, according to a new report from the Government Accountability Office. The GAO found that fatigue among service members appeared to be more the rule than the exception, with active duty troops sleeping less than 7 hours nightly, twice as often as civilians. That lack of sleep has contributed to safety mishaps, near misses, and numerous deaths. Quote, "There's recognition of this problem within the military," the GAO report author said. "The problem is no one owns it. Health experts recommend 7 to 9 hours of sleep for adults. It's not just quantity. Sleep quality is important too, making it hard for troops with uncomfortable mattresses or pilots dealing with noise and light to get meaningful shut-eye. But actual implementation from new sleep efforts ultimately won't fall to the top brass. It will be up to unit leaders. All leaders know that at the end of the day, when the mission is there, the ultimate responsibility for the military is to accomplish the mission, and then at times, sleep will be sacrificed. But it doesn't have to be sacrificed every day."
This is a good point. I don't remember that being a problem in my 22 years of active duty, and I don't remember getting a lot of sleep either. But I can tell you now that I'm in my 80s, I'm very aware of my need for sleep.
And late last month, our Coast Guard inaugurated a new multi-mission ship, the Melvin Bell, named for a World War II veteran who radioed the first alarms after the attack on Pearl Harbor. Held at the Coast Guard Academy in a tent sheltered from rain, the commissioning included remarks by the commanding officer of the 154-foot-long cutter, Lieutenant Patrick Kelly, and Robert Bell, son of the ship's namesake, who described his father as a proud native Hawaiian and fierce American patriot. The $45 million fast response cutter is designed for drug and migrant interdiction, coastal security, fisheries enforcement, search and rescue, and national defense. She is the 55th of 65 such Sentinel-class ships that the Coast Guard has ordered to replace 1980s-era 110-foot patrol boats.
Well, I'm glad our Coast Guard is getting the ships they need to do the job. We have a great Coast Guard. And that's the news. As Americans, it's our responsibility to ensure that our nation is well-run and on the right path. Politics and politicians are confusing, but we can work together. Concerned Veterans for America can assist you, even if you're not a vet, in getting involved in getting our nation back on track. Working with them is one of the things I do. Check cvafrontlines.com. That's cvafrontlines.com. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. Coming up on Frontlines of Freedom, I'll share comments by the Colonel and we'll enjoy some more wisdom. Then we'll discuss our Bill of Rights. At ease, troops, take a break. In business for over 30 years with over $1 billion in sales, Universal Coin and Bullion is my go-to source for gold and silver coins. And right now, they're offering our listeners a newly minted 0.99 fine 1 ounce 2024 silver American Eagle coin for just $27. Call 800-UCB-GOLD, 800-UCB-GOLD, or go to their website at universalcoin.com/Denny.
This is Marine Vet Skip Correa with your Home Defense Tip of the Week. According to the U.S. Department of Justice, your front door is the number one preferred entry point for home invaders. On average, it takes 5 seconds to break down your solid steel security door. To prevent this, reinforce your door frame by doubling the 2x4s and by using longer, case-hardened screws to attach the hinges to the door frame. This is just one more way to keep your family safe. For more useful tips on home and personal defense, visit HomeDefenseShow.com.
HelpVet.net is a national help center helping the military community with all of your everyday needs. Whether you need a realtor, an attorney, health-related services, or information on retirement planning, financial resources, or more, our vast network of hand-picked qualified service providers are waiting to help you. With up-to-date military news and resources, you can find answers to all of your daily needs at HelpVet.net. HelpVet.net wants to thank you for your service, and may God continue to bless the U.S. of A.
Do you have a story inside you yearning to come out? As a self-published author, you are free to creatively distribute your book online or using your own professional connections. White Feather Press will publish your manuscript and set up online distribution, allowing the author to retain all copyright and distribution rights as well as all profits. Check out White Feather Press at publishyourdream.com. White Feather Press, reaffirming faith in God, family, and country. This is Colonel Danny Gillum. It is 20 minutes after the hour, and you are in formation and listening to the front lines of freedom all across America. Troops, even if our economy wasn't a mess with inflation going crazy and prices up out of sight, I'd still recommend that you do some investing in precious metals, gold and silver. I encourage you to join me in purchasing these solid investments from Universal Coin and Bullion. Find them at universalcoin.com/Denny. That's universalcoin.com/Denny. Now it's time for comments by the Colonel. Troops, all Muslims are not terrorists. I know many Muslims who are good Americans. However, I feel safe to say, as a result of studies that began when I was a Mideast war planner in the late 1970s, that many of the terrorists in the world are Muslims. Recently, a mass shooting in a concert hall in Moscow, Russia, killed over 130 people and wounded many more. Muslim terrorists do attack innocent civilians, often at church or school or entertainment events, where there are lots of targets. And they've been doing this for all of my lifetime. Indeed, that's how the current war in Gaza began. The Islamic State released a statement claiming credit for the Russian incident. It seems that our embassy in Moscow had advance warning of the attack. The White House spokesman John Kirby said, quote, "Right now, we don't know to what extent this warning from our embassy in early March and this attack are related, but we had some concerns about the possibility of a terrorist attack in and around Moscow," end quote. So, given our southern border, could it happen here? The answer must be yes. Indeed, you could say that it has already happened here, sort of, September 11th, 2001. Does anybody think that our enemies weren't encouraged by the 9/11 attack, the attack in Israel, and the Moscow atrocity to conduct such an operation here? With such easy access to our country and with so many fanatical beliefs floating around the world, what would deter them? The Cato Institute noted that since 2017, our Border Patrol has apprehended 342 border crossers who are on the terror watch list. Those numbers have shot up in recent years to 169 in 2023 and 49 so far this year. In March last year, our Border Patrol apprehended an Al-Shabaab terrorist and released him into our country after a mismatch on the watch list. Later, they discovered the mistake, and ICE arrested him within 48 hours, but he roamed free for a year. FBI Director Christopher Wray has testified several times about his belief that a national security threat exists because of the 1.8 million known gotaways. And I don't think he was including any of the Republican activists the FBI is pursuing as a part of this number. Okay, Homeland Security Secretary Mayorkas is unable to confirm that every suspected terrorist who crosses our border without proper documentation has been detained by the Border Patrol. I wonder why he can't. Anyway, it's clear that it doesn't take many terrorists to do a lot of damage, as we saw on 9/11 and in the Moscow concert hall incident. While 9/11 was predictable, Osama bin Laden and others issued fetas calling for attacks on us, and they declared war on us, and the terrorists trained on how to take off in airplanes but not land here in the U.S. We should have seen this coming. Might any of our nation's enemies who are taking advantage of our wide-open borders be giving any clues of their intent? Could those illegals found on the terror watch list, plus the gotaways, be here for a reason? And since we're giving these illegal aliens new phones, money, and more, why would the gotaways not want to go through the clearance process? And they may do more than just kill. Why not take over towns or regions or buildings and live there, at least for a while? That could take hostages? If one big attack or a series of smaller attacks occurs, you may count on our president to blame the Republicans, as he's currently doing, for refusing to vote for a bill that would legalize 5,000 migrants per day coming in. Here's the story of one hostage taken by Hamas in Israel. Amit Susanna endured sexual assaults and other forms of violence during her 55 days in captivity following the October 7 attack. Abducted from her home by 10 men, Susanna said she was subjected to a horrifying series of events that saw her beaten, dragged into Gaza. She was locked alone, chained by her ankles, and forced to perform sexual acts under threat of a gun. Any reason why the terrorists wouldn't do that here? Well, there is one reason why these things might be different should there be an attack here, because it's not just the Muslim terrorists who are working with the Mexican cartels to enter our country. There are thousands of military-age males from China, more from Russia, North Korea, and virtually every nation that hates us. Who knows what plans those illegals have? And we know that they have weapons and equipment. It's smuggled across our border by the cartels. We discussed some of this last week on the show. In 2003, Tom Clancy, one of my favorite authors, published a timely novel, Teeth of the Tiger. The plot, in part, is about Islamic terrorists who make a deal with drug smugglers. Crossing our southern border, they head for four shopping malls in middle America, where they murder innocent civilians. Again, it doesn't take much to wreak havoc, tank our economy, and strike fear in the hearts of everyone. It could happen again here, and likely will, unless this or a new administration moves quickly to find the suspected terrorists who are here, and before they can activate a plot worthy of another Clancy novel. So, what are we going to do? Option one, do nothing, just let them keep coming and hope they're really nice people. Option two is take this seriously. We need state and national leaders who prepare our military, the FBI, our police, our citizens for eternal war. I vote for option two. And those are my comments for today. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. You're listening to Frontlines of Freedom. And now we get to enjoy some warrant wisdom with Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby. What do you have to share this week, Roland?
Well, recently, President Joe Biden signed the $1.2 trillion spending package, which included $11.8 billion to the U.S. Coast Guard to support its missions and operations, including the purchase of a commercially available icebreaker to provide coverage in the polar regions. The service currently has a heavy icebreaker and a medium icebreaker capable of ocean operations, but the Coast Guard icebreaker Polar Sea has been out of service since 2010 as a result of an engine failure. And in 2017, the Coast Guard determined that fixing the 48-year-old ship would be too expensive and decided to use it as a source of parts for its sister ship, the Polar Star. Now, the Coast Guard has requested at least $125 million each year since 2021 to buy a commercial icebreaker to continue operations in the polar regions while waiting for delivery of three planned polar security icebreakers, which likely won't start coming online until at least 2028. The proposed purchase is intended to provide for U.S. operations in the Arctic as China and Russia step up their presence in the area. Russia has 55 icebreakers, while China has expanded its fleet, and it's calling itself a near-Arctic state. So what commercially available icebreaker is the Coast Guard going to buy? Well, likely, it will be the world's most powerful privately owned icebreaker, the 361-foot IVIC, which was built down in Louisiana in 2012 and was used by Shell for doing Arctic exploration. In 2022, the Coast Guard released the capabilities they wanted to see in buying an icebreaker. These included a commercial vessel constructed at a U.S. shipyard, able to break at least 3 feet of ice at a continuous speed of 3 knots. It should be able to stay underway for at least 60 days, and the ability to handle the landing of a Coast Guard helicopter. The IVIC is the only vessel that is currently available that meets these requirements. And it's likely going to cost the Coast Guard about $150 million to purchase a ship, and then another $150 million to retrofit it for military use. You know, what I find just amazing is that our government has been so short-sighted that the Coast Guard is now in a situation where it needs to purchase a commercial ship for Arctic instead of a ship built specifically for military use. I mean, can you imagine the Navy looking to purchase a commercial ship for use as a frigate? Oh, well, for Frontlines of Freedom, I'm Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby. Back to you, Colonel.
Thanks, Roland. I really enjoy you. Thanks for those comments. Straight ahead on Frontlines of Freedom, we'll discuss our Bill of Rights with David Bob. Then we'll learn about the Military Officers Association of America. All this is coming up. I'm Colonel Denny Gilliam. You're standing tall with the Frontlines of Freedom. I'll be right back. Troops, it's time for some wind sprints. Do them for a couple of miles, then stand at ease.
As veterans, we at Concerned Veterans for America know defending freedom comes at a high cost. Our lawmakers should consider that cost when they send troops to war.
If wars don't serve our national interest, our brave men and women shouldn't be deployed into harm's way. Our troops should not be in combat because Congress doesn't want to make tough decisions about military engagement.
Find out how you can join the movement to end our nation's endless wars at cvafrontlines.com. That's cvafrontlines.com.
Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to Veteran Veterans Program's mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Frontlines of Freedom promo code. Troops, welcome back to our nation's largest military veteran talk radio show, Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gilliam. Troops, please do send me your comments and questions. Email me through frontlinesoffreedom.com. It's an honor to welcome back to the show David Bob. He's the president and CEO of the Bill of Rights Institute. Our nation is not a democracy. It's a constitutional republic. It's the Constitution that we military folks, and some others in public office, take an oath to support and defend, and most Americans know very little about our Constitution. And certainly the Bill of Rights plays a key role in protecting our rights. So welcome, David. Thanks for joining us again. I appreciate you.
Honored to be with you, Denny.
David, start by telling us a little bit about your background and how you got so interested in the Bill of Rights.
I grew up in the Midwest. I had the job as a high school student of delivering newspapers. And I came to a love of following current events and what was in the news and ultimately some things related to politics because of that. And a teacher of mine who challenged me to think more deeply. And I also found kind of a civic spark in the dinnertime conversations I had with my parents who wanted me to be involved in local community life and be aware of what was going on in our country as a whole. I went on to study politics and history in college, did a PhD in political science, and thought maybe I would go into something other than teaching, but I really was drawn back to the classroom and ultimately landed at the Bill of Rights Institute, where we work with young people and teachers all across the country. In fact, we work with about 2 in 5 of the secondary school teachers of civics and history in the United States. And we're honored to come alongside them to help them with the difficult task now of doing history and civics in a really solid, energetic way.
Oh, that's awesome. And you talked about your degree in political science. I have one too. And I always refer to political science as the one true science. That dings my engineering friends as I try to do it. But I really appreciate what you just said, because the kids that I taught didn't know anything to speak of. Again, there are exceptions, but they were exceptions. So I'm delighted to hear more about the Bill of Rights Institute. But let's start by talking about our rights. Does the Bill of Rights grant rights or protect rights or both?
Well, it's really a protection of rights. The rights that we have come to us because we're human beings. We're created, as the Declaration of Independence talks about, as it affirms. You know, the founders of this country were very far-seeing. They really were thinkers. They wanted to understand, like you said, the science of politics, which is to say, what are the ways that we can know how to live and govern ourselves? They wanted to figure this out, and they looked at history, and they saw that for most of human history, people have lived by force or accident. That's just a way of saying they lived in tyranny. They didn't live in freedom. And they wondered, could we construct a form of government, a constitutional republic, that would actually allow people to live in freedom? And what you have to start with, first off, is that you're not the end all and be all, that we human beings are not, and that we're created beings that were endowed by our creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness among them. All of that's affirmed in the Declaration. That's our vision statement for our country. The mission is defined in the Constitution. And the Bill of Rights was tacked on to the Constitution when they realized we should have written down some things, codified them, so that we're not going to put to a popular vote, for example, 50% plus one winning the day. Should people have the right to free speech? No, it's such a sacred thing. Your right to religious liberty is such a sacred thing. And on through the list of the first 10 amendments, these are things that the government, in many cases, cannot do to you. They cannot restrict your liberty, right? It's really an inhibition on governmental power. It's a check on governmental power as much as it bestows rights on individuals. So it's really a protection of the rights that are owed to us by the nature of our being thinking, reasoning beings.
Yes, sir. Certainly, there were other democracies, but in a democracy, if 51% of us vote to kill the other 49%, that's fine, or make slaves of them, or take their property, or do whatever. It's that Constitution that made the difference. And the Bill of Rights, yes, sir, it was something, oh my gosh, we may have given the government too much unrestricted power. We need to do something. Thank you. Let's keep going. This is right on course.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, Colonel Gillum. There, when you think of it, you know, kind of like, let's look at the Federalist. These are newspaper articles originally published by Alexander Hamilton, James Madison, and John Jay. They combined and they wrote under a pseudonym, Publius. And when they surveyed all of history, they said, you know, yeah, democracy, it doesn't really work very well because of that majoritarian rule. We need to put a check on the majority. Because you look at Athens, for example. Athens handed Socrates the hemlock. But it wouldn't matter, even if Athens was made up of people as wise as Socrates, we still would have a problem. Another quotation I like from the Federalist, enlightened statesmen will not always be at the helm. You know, we're not always going to have a George Washington serving as president. And even though the makers of our Constitution, the framers of that document, were confident that Washington would be our first president, they knew that there would be other people that were not enlightened, as they said. And so what you do is you construct government in such a way that you guard against the most difficult or kind of the worst impulses of human nature. And you try to raise up and ignite the potential for self-government. And that confidence that says, hey, human beings are capable of self-government is worthy of celebration. And here we are, you know, think fast forward to July 4th, 2026. Our country will turn 250 years old on that day. It's a birthday. That will be a momentous occasion for our country. Are we going to celebrate it? Are we going to lament it? You know, what kind of things are we going to do to be ready so that we can extend our constitutional republic by another 250 years.
Yes, sir. This is Colonel Denny Gilliam on Front Lines of Freedom. We're discussing the Bill of Rights. I appreciate your comments, but even if George Washington could be duplicated, even the very best of people occasionally do dumb things. My wife and I kid each other. It would be very difficult to be married to a perfect person who was always right. So we promise to be imperfect. Very good people do dumb things too. We need that protection, not just against the non-really good people, but against all people, right?
Absolutely. You know, we're imperfect by our nature, and that may be a controversial thing to say today. Perhaps even more contentious or controversial would be to say we can't be perfected. George Washington noted that perfection falls not to human beings, and he worked at it throughout his life. George Washington as a young man was somebody that we can all relate to, though. and throughout his life for that matter, right? He was rash. He was impulsive. I told my students that George Washington as a young man would have been all over Instagram. he was kind of vain, right? I mean, and he knew that he looked good in his uniform and he wanted the world to know it. So we all have things that are lacking, not just in our personality, but it goes to the core of who we are. And that doesn't mean that we have to stay at that level. You can grow as a human being. You can overcome your struggles. And one of the things that really impresses me about the American experiment is that we built into our vision and mission statements, and then kind of our strategic operating plan, if you will, a self-correcting series of steps. We were willing to amend the Constitution. It's very hard to amend it, but we have amended it. We put things out to the people. We make sure that the Constitution itself was ratified by the people, that the Bill of Rights was ratified by the people. And we recognize that we didn't get everything right at the get-go. The founders knew that they were going to overlook things. They knew that they had a gaping hole and a terrible thing in the institution of slavery, and that they needed to solve for that so that all human beings, all Americans, would enjoy freedom and equality. And by writing down the equality and freedom of human beings in the Declaration, they allowed future generations to appeal to that standard that we can live up to and that we can become a more perfect union. And I think that's what I hope as we look ahead to July 4th, 2026, that we keep in mind, that we point back to those principles and say, we've come so far and we've achieved so much as a country. Let's recognize that that is worthy of celebration, even as we continue to improve and make America a better experiment for all.
Amen. There's more to discuss about our Bill of Rights, and David is going to stay with us. This is Colonel Danny Gillum on Front Lines of Freedom. Yeah, it's push-up time. I want you to do 103 push-ups. That's how many I do, well, 7 times a week. Anyway, then take a break and stay in the area. David and I will be right back. When considering precious metals investments, credibility is paramount. That's why I chose Universal Coin and Bullion. They have a long-standing reputation in the industry that instills confidence in investors. Plus, the company's president, Dr. Mike Fulgens, is recognized as America's gold expert by his peers and the U.S. government, and was named Dealer of the Year by the American Numismatic Association. Call 800-UCB-GOLD or go to their website at universalcoin.com/Denny.
Friends, Adam here, Patriot Foods, U.S. only company. Frozen fruits and vegetables straight from our dirt, not overseas. Support the U.S. farmer. When you shop at patriotfoods.com, we give back to a military family in need. We got to take care of each other, my friends. We have to. So important. 10% off patriotfoods.com. 10% off promo code FREEDOM and shop today.
This is Colonel Danny Gillum. This is the final formation for this hour on Front Lines of Freedom. We're continuing our conversation with David Bob about our Bill of Rights. So our founders really had a good handle on things. They didn't see themselves as perfect, and they were truly trying to create something that could be adjusted as necessary so that we could live as free a life as possible. Is that a fair summary?
It is. You know, it's funny. I work with young people now, and our network of teachers, the Bill of Rights Institute, stretches to 7.5 million secondary school students all across the country. And one of the trends that we've seen is that the tendency, if you just pay attention to textbooks, for example, in civics and history, is to think that the main engine of our economic, moral, and political progress in the United States has been driven by government, and especially government from Washington, D.C. The founders knew better. They actually saw that the main engine of progress is going to come from human ingenuity outside of government, what we might think of as civil society. What you want to do is unleash that potential, which is unlimited. In order to unleash that potential, though, you have to make sure that the government is small enough, that it's limited. It's important, and I think, you know, veterans understand this because they take an oath. small government, constitutionally limited government, does not mean weak government. We, the people, have empowered the national government to do things that it must do, like protect our borders, defend our homeland. That's strength, not weakness. If the government sticks to the things that it alone can do, it will allow for that freedom that you rightfully stated, Denny, as the goal. And what we have to get back to, I think, what we have to think very carefully about with our young people especially, but Americans of all ages, is how do we have that kind of dynamic growth commitment, that mindset that says we don't want to live in resentment, but in gratitude, that we want to build into this amazing experiment and continue to expand freedom for all Americans. What an example we've been to people around the globe, right? The opportunity that America has stood for nearly 250 years is such a precious and amazing thing. It will take all of us to retain a kind of vigilance to ensure that it continues on.
Yes, sir. It's too easy to say, we've got a really good government, and then ignore it. I've often heard it said, the opposite of love is hate, but another opposite of love is indifference. And if we don't pay attention to it, because it's our government, it's not some king who's in charge here, and if we don't know what's going on, and if we don't keep track of our elected officials, we're not doing our job, and we're putting all this at risk. At least that's my opinion.
I think you're right. You know, there's a technology that allowed us to look at the words that Jefferson wrote when he actually penned the Declaration of Independence. He took the first cut at it. And you know how if you're writing in longhand and you want to scratch something out, you scratch over it and you make sure that nobody could read what you had written if you don't have an erasable ink. Well, he did that with a word. And people were wondering, well, what was that word that he wrote down? And you know what it was? It was subjects. He had referred to Americans incorrectly as subjects. And he crossed that out, he blotted it out, and he wrote citizens. That's a huge difference. Yeah. It's everything, right? There are a lot of people around the world right now that are subjects to their government. They do not have freedom. They want it. We have it. And what we want to do is work hard, as you say, to maintain it, to build it, to grow it for all. And I think what that starts with is the local level. You know, we work with schools, we work with school teachers, we work with students. And right now, it's a very difficult thing to be a civics teacher. And one thing that people can do practically in their communities is support their teachers by saying, we want you to teach the whole of American history. We want you to teach tough topics. Take up current events in the classroom. Do so with all sides in mind, what educators call viewpoint diversity. Iron sharpens iron. That's true in the classroom. It's true in the armed services. It's true in our businesses. And we want to breathe that spirit into our classroom so that young people recognize that they need to understand other perspectives. They need to learn about our founding. They need to learn about Frederick Douglass. They need to learn about the suffrage movement and what it meant. They need to learn about the civil rights struggle. American freedom has been born of struggle and sacrifice. People who have given their all for these things that we sometimes can take for granted. And the best way to do that is, I think, for people at the local level to rebuild the bonds of trust that in our polarized, politicized times have become pretty frayed. And we think that starts with civics in our schools.
Yes, sir. This is Colonel Denny Gilliam on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with David Bob. David, I could not agree more with you. We need to be able to talk with each other. If you and I were on the total opposite sides of some issue, by talking, not arguing, not dictating, I can at least understand why you think what you think, and you can understand why I think what. And that's the strength of diversity. That kind of diversity is what makes our nation great, because neither one of us is going to have all the right ideas, not much less all the other people. Yes, sir, I think you're right on.
56% of high school students, this is true across the country, nationwide survey done, feel confident that they can disagree with their teachers and fellow students in the classroom. That means that 44% don't. And what I fear is happening across the country, not only in our classrooms, but in boardrooms, in neighborhood gatherings is we kind of tiptoe around each other, right? You feel like you're walking on eggshells. And those neighborly conversations that could begin with, hey, let's talk about how our families are doing. Let's talk about some of the things that are happening in our country. Let's maybe even make a joke about votes canceling each other out, right? Those kind of conversations are the glue that allow us to stick together and recognize that in a nation of 330 million people, we have to manage disagreement, not eliminate it. And the Constitution and the Bill of Rights are the best means that ever have been devised by human beings to manage disagreement. So I think we ought to not seek for the kumbaya point of, you know, kind of easygoing agreement. We're too big and vast a people. We're too diverse. But the unum that we have to really pour into is how do we go about our politics? How do we go about our activities in our communities in a way that says, I don't see enemies here internally. I may have people that I disagree with. We're going to have that. But how do we figure out a path forward for us to be able to manage our civic affairs, go about our politics, do the business of America, making this experiment great? How do we do that effectively?
Well said, sir. David, we're getting out of time. How can listeners learn more about the Bill of Rights Institute, get plugged into it, get involved?
You know, one of the things that is available to everybody, and I encourage you to visit our website. If you go to mybri.org, we have a library of 4,000 resources. All of them are available to adults and young people alike. I'd also encourage you to think about what you could do in your local communities to encourage your teachers, whether you're a member of a school board, your kids, your grandkids, introduce them to the Bill of Rights Institute resources. We do teacher trainings all across the country. I'd love to hear from your listeners about places that we should be involved in, places that we can go and hold these gatherings for educators, hold gatherings for citizens, another thing that the Bill of Rights Institute does, so that business leaders, community leaders, teachers, and students alike can get together and work through some of these challenging issues before us. I think it's going to take one community at a time, being devoted to the hard work of civics. That's our mission. And I welcome the opportunity to hear any ideas that you have as we approach America's 250th birthday. What are the things that we can do to bind us together as a people?
That's well said, and I strongly encourage people to do that. By the way, I trust you are a nonprofit and would not be opposed to donations too.
That's absolutely right. We welcome contributions. In the last several years, we've had more than 15,000 people, dozens of foundations that step up and make our work possible. I know the teachers that are all across this country, 75,000 strong in all 50 states and the District of Columbia, are grateful for those contributions. You can go to our website, check us out on all the social media channels, including YouTube, mybri.org.
One more time, the website address.
Sure thing. It's mybri, mybri.org.
Thank you, David. Thank you for your excellent comments and your continuing service to our nation and our nation's constitution. I appreciate you.
Thank you very much, Colonel Gillum. Appreciate the opportunity to talk today.
This concludes the first hour of our show. Straight ahead on Front Lines of Freedom, Navy veteran Reggie Howard will discuss Heroes Corner, a great veterans outreach. Then Teresa Robertson will introduce us to another female veteran. Of course, we'll conclude with our weekly mailbag, military history, and our self-defense report. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Front Lines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for some pull-ups. Do 40 good ones, maybe 20 more push-ups. Grab some protein, rehydrate with water. And finally, put a big smile on your proud-to-be-an-American face and send me your thoughts by email or on Facebook.